she'll be speaking about a tricky question. Should trichomoniasis be a nationally notifiable disease? Something I think we're all interested in.
Good morning. So now we're going to get really crazy and change gears and go to Trichomonas vaginalis. So Trichomonas vaginalis is a sexually transmitted infection caused by a protozoan parasite. And for the rest of the presentation, I'm going to refer to Trichomonas vaginalis as TRIC. Most infections, approximately 70%, are asymptomatic, and men are more likely to be asymptomatic than women. And that approximately 30% of people that do have symptoms of disease called trichomoniasis, the most frequent symptoms include vaginitis in women and urethritis in men. TRIC is curable with the antiprotozoals metronidazole or tinidazole. So TRIC is not currently under surveillance, and recently some researchers have become interested in making TRIC reportable. And some potential reasons for doing this include the high prevalence of the infection, its association with adverse health events, including HIV transmission, and the recent introduction of simple and highly sensitive detection assays for TRIC infection. The objective of this presentation is to evaluate whether TRIC should be a reportable infection at the state level or a nationally notifiable infection. And I'll focus on the following two questions. First, what is the public health importance of TRIC infection? And second, if TRIC were reportable, would case reports be informative and useful? So to consider whether TRIC should be under surveillance, I used the updated guidelines for evaluating public health surveillance systems, which were published in the MMWR in 2001. This includes a list of public health importance criteria that a disease or condition should meet before we make it, before we put it under surveillance. So the U.S. doesn't have specific guidelines to look at in terms of whether or not a disease should be reportable, but other countries like Canada and Australia do. And this list of public health importance criteria corresponds really well to those countries. So first, looking at the public health importance of TRIC, does TRIC meet the criteria for recommended surveillance from the MMWR? So there are seven public health importance criteria, and I'll walk through each of these. So the first criterion is frequency. So TRIC is the most prevalent curable STI in the U.S. And a nationally representative sample of U.S. women aged 14 to 49 years was tested for TRIC by PCR and NHANES, or the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey from 2001 to 2004. And the prevalence of TRIC infection among these women was 3.1%, which corresponded to 2.3 million women nationally. Studies have also been done to look at prevalence in select populations. And in women attending STD clinics, prevalence has been as high as 34%, and in incarcerated women up to 60%. So I'd say based on these data that TRIC definitely meets the frequency criterion. In terms of severity, TRIC is associated with several adverse health outcomes. In pregnant women with trichomoniasis, there's increased risk of adverse birth outcomes, including preterm delivery and delivery of a low birth weight infant. Concomitant infection with other STIs is also common with TRIC infection. And in a few studies, there's been a reported twofold increased risk of HIV acquisition among women with vaginal trichomoniasis, and a twofold risk of HIV transmission among women co-infected with TRIC and HIV. But as I said, an estimated 70% of infections are asymptomatic. And with or without treatment, duration of the infection is likely a few months to a few years. So ultimately, in non-pregnant women without high-risk sexual behaviors, an adverse outcome is unlikely. So because of this, I'd say it's unclear whether or not TRIC meets the severity criterion. So this is a graph of prevalence of TRIC by race, ethnicity in the NHANES sample from 2001 to 2004. As you can see, there's a notable racial disparity with a prevalence of TRIC among non-Hispanic black women that's approximately 10 times that among non-Hispanic white women. TRIC prevalence also varies by age in the NHANES sample, with prevalence increasing up to women aged 30 to 39 years. So I think TRIC clearly meets the associated disparities criterion. In terms of cost, it's difficult to estimate the direct or indirect cost due to TRIC because so many infections are asymptomatic and because we don't have good data on incidence and prevalence. So one study looked at direct costs of TRIC in women with employer-based insurance and found that TRIC cost up to $101 per episode treated. So that's cost to the woman and cost paid out by the insurer. So the study also estimated annual economic burden nationally due to TRIC and found that it was $6.8 million among women, these women with employer-based insurance, and they estimated that it was about $18.9 million among all women. So that's a lot of money, but if you know costs of other STIs, it's actually much lower compared to other STIs. but it doesn't include costs of possible sequelae, such as HIV or preterm birth, or indirect costs such as lost time at work, other things. However, I think it's also important to note that the cost of surveillance, screening, and control for TRIC would likely exceed these direct medical costs. So because of this, I'm going to put the costs in the unclear category as well. So in terms of preventability, TRIC may be preventable on an individual level through condom use. But on the population level, a reduction in prevalence would likely require widespread screening and partner treatment. And this would be costly and also extremely burdensome for STD programs because of the high incidence of TRIC. And I'd also like to note that experience with making chlamydia similarly prevalent and curable STI nationally notifiable suggests that prospects for reducing the prevalence of TRIC are limited. So because TRIC may be preventable on an individual level, but maybe not so much on a population level, I'm going to put this in the unclear category as well. So in terms of communicability, TRIC has a high transmission rate to sexual partners. Among women with TRIC infection, 14 to 60% of their male partners are infected, and among men with TRIC infection, 67 to 100% of their female partners are infected. So TRIC clearly meets the communicability criterion. The last criterion is public interest. And in the 1996 Kaiser Foundation Family Survey of Americans aged 18 to 64 years, only 2% were able to name TRIC as an STI. There aren't current data on TRIC knowledge and awareness, but it's not expected to be that much higher because we haven't had any media campaigns for TRIC like those for chlamydia. But it's worth noting that TRIC is included in the GYT campaign, or Get Yourself Tested. So at this time, I'd say TRIC does not meet the public interest criteria. And in summary, TRIC currently only meets 3 of the 7 criteria. So now I'm going to switch to my second question, which was, if we do make TRIC reportable, would case reports be informative and useful? So first, how do we diagnose a case of TRIC infection? Well, previously we relied on microscopy of vaginal secretions, known as a wet mount microscopy. And this method has a sensitivity of only 60 to 70%, and it required immediate evaluation of a wet prep slide. But recently, the Nucleic Acid Amplification Test, or NAT, was approved by the FDA in last April. And this has a sensitivity of greater than 90% in both men and women. There's also a recent introduction of a trivalent assay for chlamydia, gonorrhea, and TRIC. You can test for all 3 at once. So chlamydia and gonorrhea are both reportable, so why not TRIC? So these are slides courtesy of Charlotte Kent from ISSTDR. And this graph shows the prevalence of TRIC, chlamydia, and gonorrhea by age group and in NHANES. So if we used this trivalent test, who would we reach with it? So the prevalence of chlamydia and gonorrhea is highest in those aged 15 to 19 years. While I said earlier that the prevalence of TRIC was highest in women aged 30 to 39 years. So if we test women at younger age groups who are the target for chlamydia-based screening, we're going to miss a lot of TRIC infection. But I think it's also worth noting that the prevalence of TRIC among those aged 15 to 19 is higher than that of gonorrhea. So it's also important to consider whether or not the case report data would be useful. So because we don't have widespread screening recommendations for TRIC, really only we recommend screening in women with HIV infection, the case reports would measure testing trends and not incidence of TRIC infection. And so we don't have a control program for TRIC, so what would we do with these data? So ideally, we would use them to inform a prevention and control program. But because the case reports would not measure incidence, we'd be unable to monitor trends or target control from the available data. And as I mentioned, the cost of control would likely be high based on the epidemiology of TRIC. So TRIC should not be reportable at this time because it meets only 3 of 7 criteria of public health importance of diseases under surveillance and because the case reports are not going to give us a true indication of incidence. So this is the giant microbe stuffed animal TRIC, and as you can see, it's very sad by my recommendation. So instead, I think screening and sentinel surveillance of certain populations, such as those at high risk of HIV infection, may be warranted to monitor local trends and would be much less costly. So I'd like to acknowledge the following colleagues at the CDC Division of STD Prevention, and thank you.
Hi. You must have been on my study section. One of the comments on my R01 that was rejected was, why would you study TRIC? It's so innocuous.
I did not write that.
I'm Jill Huppert. I'm from Cincinnati. And one of the questions I had for you, and thanks for doing that. I hadn't seen those seven sentinel things. It's always a very important thing. In fact, I think that's really important for us to look at it very rigorously. But one of the questions I had for you is this assumption about the trivalent chlamydia, gonorrhea, and trich screening. You kind of seem to assume that they have to be bundled. Would it be possible to not bundle those and do a separate test for the older women?
Yes, so it's definitely possible to only do one of the tests at a time.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'll commonly, though, be bundled together because I think women will be...
But they're different. I mean, that's
They are
my,
different.
Yeah, I mean, like, just we got to, like, trick is different. I mean, that's
no,
what I'm...
No, sure,
you know,
definitely.
And I think we have to stop lumping it with the diseases of younger women, and we have a good trick test right now that you could unbundle. You know, so clearly
so there are
bundling it for the younger groups is really important, but unbundling it for the older groups is important, and right now it's pretty cheap.
Definitely. So that's a really good point. Yeah. There are other
The rapid test is really, really cheap. So
sure, the rapid test is cheap, and then we have the NET and the
CR. So it could be reportable, and then we would know what to do with it.
Charlie Gatos, Johns Hopkins. I'm questioning your severity of trichomonas. If you had a low birth weight baby that died, I think all of us would think that was pretty severe. And so CDC is very interested in disparities and the fact that trichomonas is very, very much higher in African Americans. I would think that it would be a very high point of interest for the CDC to be thinking about the disparity issue. As I see more and more studies coming out associating trichomonas with HIV acquisition and transmissibility, I would think that this would also be a point of interest for the CDC, since we are very interested in HIV and preventing acquisition of it in this country, particularly among blacks. So just my thoughts.
Thanks. Sure, and I'm definitely not saying that trich isn't important, that we don't need to look at it further. I'm just saying I don't think it should be reportable at this time.
Hi, Mary Jo Moners from the Public Health Clinic in Minneapolis. Kind of along the same lines, and I'm not sure if I'm standing up here to talk about the importance of reporting, but just, you know, among colleagues in the public health profession, that for years I've struggled with trich because what I see it do is devastate relationships, cause a lot of confusion in couples, just because of the way it presents in bodies. When I've worked with couples where, you know, women have these severe, intense symptoms and men have nothing, and then it kind of reinforces some of the negative stereotypes of women regarding just how it plays out in couples. I just feel like we need to do more around this issue in general because I just see it getting worse and not better. And so I'm hoping with the advance in testing, things can change a little bit around that.
Yes,
and I just think it's important to say some of that out loud
because sure,
I see that a lot in just kind of health education field.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for your comment.
Hi, thank you. This is Heidi Bauer from California. I wrote an editorial on neonatal herpes and used a very similar framework for, you know, compared to what you used, and came up with very similar conclusions. One of the most, and there are seven criteria in that framework. Other frameworks offer different criteria. They need to be weighed differently, and I think for me, wearing my public health hat, what I was most concerned about was that when you make something reportable that is not tested and diagnosed with a laboratory test, you have almost inherently very underreported cases and inadequate reporting. And I'll give you an example. In California is one of probably 20-some states that have PID as a reportable condition. For political reasons and public health reasons, our numbers are so low that they are completely unreliable. We publish them in small print. We do nothing with the data. And the real concern is if you have a very important public health disease and a very poor surveillance system, it actually hurts you, and it hurts, you know, efforts to raise visibility. And we have lots of labs and lots of providers, and provider reporting is really, really challenging. And so until the diagnostic testing is institutionalized and laboratories are doing it and they're getting test results and they can do electronic transfer of data, I think one of the most compelling reasons is that we would undercount so significantly that it really wouldn't help us in developing prevention and control programs. And so I wanted to throw that into the mix because I think for me it was really important.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yes, so we definitely have these great tests now, but a significant proportion would still be using wet mount until these tests are routinized.
In terms of cost, was there any way to factor in the patient who over the past year or two had come in on multiple occasions and was diagnosed and treated for bacterial vaginosis, but trich was missed on wet mount, and so where they could have been tested appropriately and worked with in one session, and if it were reportable, had their partners also dealt with it in a more expedient, surer fashion, would not have had to return the subsequent 7-8 times for the next 2 years.
So that's an excellent point, and I don't think it was brought up in the cost article that informed this presentation.
I think you'll be the last word.
Thank you. Carla Schmidt, formerly with the Florida Department of Health and having headed up the complete rewrite of the administrative code for notifiable conditions, very intimately familiar with these criteria. I'd like to offer for consideration that we don't have to make a condition reportable for the full age spectrum. And Dr. Gaines has already pointed out the disparity issue. Right. Also, as you point to the common age bracket where we recommend screening and hence we get most reporting for chlamydia and gonorrhea is also associated with the, should we say, the prevalence of pregnancy. Sure. So an identification of trich in pregnancy might inform us with real-time valid data today associated with pregnancy. You know, you noted it's a risk for adverse outcomes. However, all of our studies really around trich in pregnancy are dated and based on culture. And we have phenomenal disparity for low birth weight among African American women throughout the country, but particularly in the South.
So that's another excellent point.
Very good. Well, I want to thank all of our panelists and the audience for coming. Thank you very much, and congratulations.